Stay tuned for The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning, and welcome to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, and I'm so glad that you joined us this morning. Today's Terry Saul Show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule State Farm Insurance. Our special guest today is Jody Jones, who is the CAMS Project Administrator. Now, good morning, Jody, and I'll tell you right off the bat, I have no clue what CAMS is, so I'm hoping you're going to tell me.
I will do my best. All right, this morning,
Jody,
thank you.
What is CAMS?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background to explain where CAMS came from. So in 2009, a state capital master plan was approved, which included several primary goals. That included seismic upgrades, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, life safety and ADA access improvements, preservation of historic elements and character, additional hearing rooms, and sustainability.
Okay.
Design work was funded and completed. However, the actual construction work was not funded. So we went
on. Well, that presents a problem, doesn't it?
It does, very much.
Oops.
So, that's kind of what happens a lot of times with the construction projects, especially with the state. You know, they've got an idea, they know what they want to do, and they start down the path. But then when they get that price tag, it's a little higher than they expected.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes to 2015. We're now 6 years later, and they decide, well, let's see if we can streamline this a little bit and pull out elements of that entire master plan and what could we do. So they prioritized that and came up with, you know, what are the at-risk MEP systems, and MEP stands for mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems, security and life safety issues, and then ADA improvements. From there, CAMS was born. So CAMS actually stands for Capital Accessibility, Maintenance, and Safety Project. So that in general is what CAMS is.
Tell me, before we get into this, tell me what your background is.
I started out with the state of Oregon about 30 years ago as a receptionist with Community Services, who eventually became Housing and Community Services, and kind of moved my way through there, overseeing a lot of low-income programs, housing, homelessness, energy assistance, weatherization, food boxes, those types of things. Eventually, I moved over and joined the team early on that constructed the two new state mental health hospitals, so the one in Salem and the one in Junction City, and I ended up being the administrator on that project. So that's my construction background, is working on those two projects. I retired for a year and a half and was called back out of retirement.
I retired 3 years ago. Does it look like I'm retired? That's how it works.
It does.
Yeah. So you got called back.
I got called back, and that was April of last year. So I've been on this project about a little more than a year now. They were having a few issues with the project, so they just wanted someone who had a lot of experience with state projects to come in and see if we could kind of get things a little bit more on track.
Now, as I drive by there, you look over there and you see all this construction going on. And you sit there and you scratch your head and go, what the hell are they building over there? What's going on? So, Jody, what are you guys doing over there right now with all the construction going on from us driving by? What's going on? What am I looking at?
Driving by, a lot of the elements you can see from the outside, and yet you can't because some of them are underground, and then we have a lot of things going on inside. So if we just break down what CAM stands for and start with the accessibility component of it,
okay.
The items that we addressed with accessibility are as simple as our information kiosk. So the information kiosk that was there had a very high wall, and it had a very narrow door to get inside. So any of our volunteers working there, or an employee who was in a wheelchair, for example, could not get inside of the kiosk. And if you were shorter, perhaps a child, or if you were in a wheelchair, you couldn't see the person who was in the kiosk because the walls were too high. So that was one of the key elements that we did as far as accessibility. We built a new kiosk so that people could access it. It has now an ADA shelf in it for people that are coming up to the kiosk as a visitor. Another item that
Where's it located?
It's right in this, when you come in the front door, or even when you come in from the south, from the back door, it's just in the center of the building. So it's not in the rotunda. You go beyond the rotunda, and you can't miss it when you walk in.
I could. Okay.
We need to put signage for you.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. And so that was the first thing that we did. Are you guys?
Well, that was one of the items that with regards to accessibility. Some of the other things, the door handles that were on there are just the common doorknobs, okay. Round doorknobs.
Sure.
Well, if you have severe arthritis or something along those lines, then we need to put levers on the doors. I don't know if you've seen those in some of the accessible doorways that are popping up now. They have a lever that you can just push or pull down or push up in order to turn. Right. So we wanted to replace those so that people coming in could get in through those particular doors.
And if you think about it, Jody, that a doorknob is not something you would think about.
Of course. Let's replace. Yes.
But that's so important to people that need a doorknob that they can get in and out of.
Exactly. And we want to make sure that everybody has access to their state capitol.
Right.
Not only to get inside of it, but once they're inside, how do they maneuver around? And so the doorknob. And one of the things that happens with that is a lot of our doorknobs also had the state seal on them. So you don't just want to replace it with a regular old lever. So what we had to do is take those doorknobs and use one of those funky 3D printers and create a template of a doorknob with the seal and the lever on it. And that's gone through several iterations, but now we're starting to get those back and we'll put those on so that we still have that historic look and
feel. Why is that so important to have the seal on a doorknob?
Well, if you think about how old this Capitol is,
how old?
I believe this one was in 1930s when this one was built. This is the third Capitol that we've had.
Okay.
And I would encourage everyone to come to the Capitol and go down into the basement. They've got all these pictures along one of the hallways that shows the fires that occurred that have destroyed our Capitol twice. One of the cool things that we found when we were digging for the vaults is a lot of what we believe is the original brick that was used for this particular site of the Capitol, and you can see burn marks on the bricks. So we think they are some of the bricks that were there and survived the fire, but you know, ended up in the dirt.
So getting back to these door handles.
Yes. It's important for us to maintain as much of the historic value of the building as possible. And so because those were original doorknobs that were put in for this particular construction of this Capitol, we wanted to mimic it as much as we possibly could. And we wanted to keep... And when you walk into the Capitol, you know, you've got this beautiful marble and, you know, the rotunda, and the doorknobs just add that little piece of ambiance of the state seal.
All right.
So,
have you ever been to the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C.? Is that rotunda, when you walk in there and you look up, is that an amazing sight to
see? It is.
Yeah, I took my son there when he graduated from junior high, and we just walked in there and just looked up, and it's like, wow. The paint job is so, I don't even know how to describe it, just amazing.
You know, bringing up the paint job in a rotunda, let's take a sidebar here really quick, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And we'll talk about one of the things that we did is just kind of a maintenance issue. In our rotunda in the state capitol, if you look up, there's also paintings up there which include several eagles. And we had one that we nicknamed the Wounded Eagle because some of his plaster, which means some of his paint, had come off. So we had someone who is basically hanging from the top of that rotunda, sort of not quite upside down but sideways, and fixing our wounded eagle. So little things like that have just been left for so long that we were able to take care of.
Wow. What else is going on besides the doorknobs?
So let's go back to ADA accessibility. Just plain and simple, how do people get into the building? So we have the issue of we only had one ADA accessible ramp into the Capitol.
Really?
And we have constructed four ramps now. So there'll be one on the east, one on the west, and two on the north, the main entry.
Okay.
We still don't have one on the south. That will come in one of the later phases when they acquire the funding to do so. So that's sort of what we did with regards to ADA.
Does it cost anything to get into the Capitol?
No.
Is there any charge at all?
Oh, of course not. No.
Okay. If I wanted to walk in there and just look around, I can do that without...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Even I could do that, huh?
Even you can do that. We might have someone follow you if you know.
No,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's the story of my life. Okay, Jody, I'll set them up and you take them down.
There you go.
All right. What else are we talking about here?
Okay, let's talk about the safety aspect of it. So one of the things that we needed to do was put in some additional fire sprinklers and smoke alarm detectors. So just to some areas that didn't have updated pieces in. Mm-hmm. In addition, we ended up adding two new stairwells, and that's where two of our new ADA accesses go into, is the little alcove that's created with those stairwells. Now, the reason the stairwells are a safety issue is we didn't have enough egress or exit areas for people to get out of that building. And especially if you're up on the fourth floor, the stairwells weren't sufficient to be able to get everybody out in a safe, timely manner. So we added two stairwells on the north side of the building, and those also include some ADA aspects to them that you wouldn't commonly think of. If you have someone who can do stairs, I'll use myself as an example, but I have a lot of issues with possibly, you know, an ankle that has a lot of arthritis in it, and I can't get up and down them easily. You need to be able to hold on to a rail. Well, ADA rails go all the way around the stairwell so that when you change floors, you can still hang on to that rail as you move up.
Nice.
Another thing that people don't really notice unless you need it is wider steps so that you're not trying to maneuver on these narrow little steps. And a third item is with those rails that they go all the way to the bottom of the stairs. So often the railings stop at the third stair up. So you still have to that's just the way that they were designed earlier.
Really?
If you want to make them more accessible, you make sure that railing goes all the way down. So the stairwells were another piece that we put in that people, again, don't often think about as something that we need. And the third component with regards to safety is we moved our Oregon State Police office from down in the basement to up on the first floor where they could more easily be called in case of an emergency. They've got better line of sight and all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the safety elements we did.
When you walk into the, I guess it would be the north entrance, which is the main entrance, right?
Correct.
Okay, you walk in there, and I've been in the building a couple of times, and I know that if you want to go to the governor's office, it's either to the right and up the stairs. Am I correct?
You can go either to the right or the left, because as you walk in the stair, or in that front entrance, if you look straight ahead of you and up, that is where the governor's office is located. So you have multiple ways that you can get up to that second floor. Most people, when they first walk in, see those grand staircases, call them, which are absolutely beautiful. But if you'll notice, there's no handrails. So that was another thing we wanted to do, is make sure we had more stairwells that had handrails on them.
Are there going to be handrails put into those?
There will not be handrails put on the grand staircase. They have still not concluded that they want to change the
cosmetic look.
Yes, thank you.
You know, I got to tell you a story. I got thrown out of the Capitol. I was just sitting at the governor's desk, minding my own business, and apparently they wanted to know why I was doing that. I said, well, I just wanted to see what it'd be like to sit at the governor's desk. And they said, okay, well, you sat there, now you can leave. And it's like, okay, well, that was fun. That was my story going into the Capitol.
That was your story. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, I'll take you on a tour. I'll show it, and I promise I won't let people follow you around.
Can I sit at the governor's desk?
When we're off session, I will arrange for that to happen for you.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that, too.
Thank you.
We got a couple of minutes left here. You said that there's four floors in the Capitol. Now, I'm only aware of two, the ground floor and then where the governor's office is. What's on the other top two?
So the Capitol has the 1938 centerpiece, which is where the governor's office is located, and the rotunda and all of those. And then we have two wings that were built in 1977.
Okay.
Those wings house the legislators. So we have the Senate on the, I'm going to get this wrong, I know it. We have the Senate on the east side and the House is on the west side.
Okay.
And so those are four floors high. And then there's some other additional office space that's connects those above where you have the governor's office. And that's just, again, we have all of the legislators' offices and their support staff, which are vacant much of the year, except when we're in session. And then we have all of the support. There's about 300 employees that are there year-round in this building. We house the Treasury office, of course, the governor's office, Secretary of State's office. We've got admin, and then you've got legislative council and legislative fiscal and all of the facilities and all of those elements are there that we don't tend to think about when we think about the Capitol, but it's its own little city, so to speak.
Isn't there some type of a television facility in there too?
Oh, we have a media center down in the basement, yes.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of folks come in too, but especially during session, we have various newspapers and print publications. And then I don't know that we have any radio stations in there specifically, but and then there's a lobby center where folks that are, you know, doing their lobbying, there's a whole room there for them.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest, and it's Jody Jones.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, cue Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Welcome back to the Terry Saul Weekend Show. Today we're talking with Jody Jones, who is the CAMS Project Administrator. And we were talking about some of the construction that's going on down at the Capitol. Have we covered all the maintenance?
No. Let's dive into some of the maintenance. Okay. We've covered accessibility and we've covered safety. Maintenance is actually the largest component that we're working on.
Why is that?
It just infiltrates so much of the building.
Okay.
What we're talking about with our maintenance is we created an east and west mechanical and electrical vaults. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But some of the other things that we've done is improving the electric service. We did a few restroom renovations, not much. Exterior caulking and ceiling, roofing and skylights, and new cooling towers. All of those components really started getting into the guts of the building, so to speak. And that's when we started kind of being around a lot with the occupants that were in there, that causes its own challenges. But some of the systems that we ended up putting in, let's go to the outside of the building, actually, the exterior caulking and ceiling. So if you look at that building, it's got all those marble slabs, and there's all this caulking in between. Well, over time, that needs attention, and it hadn't been getting attention over the years.
Why is that?
One of the things that I would say happens with most state buildings, and that's just because I've been in several over the 30 years, whenever we have budget cuts, the first thing to go is maintenance, because you want to continue to provide services to Oregonians, and they never really add the maintenance back in. That's what's happened also with the Capitol over time, is there might have been a maintenance budget at one time, but as different things happened and they needed to be able to shore up various aspects of the state to cut budgets, they would cut maintenance budgets. So now what we've got is we've got to go back and fix some of those things. So we've got those seals and the caulking that we want to repair. When you're driving by, especially this spring, we had it all last summer and into the fall, you'll see people hanging off the building. And it's kind of like a window washer, but he's not. He's actually in there, you know, scraping out the old caulking and re-caulking things to make sure that that's shored up.
So the whole building's getting a facelift, isn't it?
It is.
The whole inside, outside, the whole building's just taking a...
It is. And this is just a small chunk of the overall master plan that they intended to do. We're not touching any of the seismic upgrades that they had talked about doing. So,
do we need to talk about that?
Not in this part of the project.
Okay. All right. What else you got going on?
When we talk about adding the cooling towers on top of the building, that is to bring in new cooling system. We've got sort of an archaic system to provide both heat and cooling for the building. So we're upgrading all of that. When we're putting that in, we also had to put in steam piping throughout the building. That is quite invasive for the occupants. So not only are we doing work during the day, but all last fall and through the summer, and part of the winter, we did night work. And what that meant was we came in the evenings, we would take pictures of people's desks of where we were working, because then we would have to move things off of their desk, in some cases, to get behind them to get to some of the steam radiators. Or we'd have to get up into the ceiling, so we would then want to cover it with some kind of plastic to keep all the dust from coming down. The folks would get in there night after night and replace various electrical wiring, as well as the piping, and put in new steam systems. When they were all done, of course, they'd clean everything up, put the ceiling back in, remove the plastic, put all the stuff back where it belonged. And then one of the nice little things we did, just because we were entering their space, we would put a little chocolate kiss on each person's desk that we were at.
Talk about sucking up.
I'm telling you. Well, you know, actually, those folks had to go through a lot with us in their space. Yeah. So
why did they replace it with steam? Is it steam heating? Is that what?
We have steam heating and cooling, and actually, we already had that in it. And so as a cost savings, rather than replacing the whole kit and caboodle, what we did is replaced elements of it that would allow us to have that cost savings and yet bring us up to a more modern system.
And the steam system works just as well as a normal?
Yes. It causes a few noises once in a while, I will say.
So the Capitol is haunted.
It is haunted. The radiator radiator system. We used to call them the singing radiators at times because, yeah. and it happened in my office, and it got to the point where I was timing it, and it was every 30 seconds it would give this obnoxious squeal. Really? And mine wasn't the only office that was happening in. So we had to do several experimentations to find the right type of valve to release the steam at the right moment and to avoid all of that. And that gets into a lot more detail and understanding wow. than I have. It also calls out the fact that the people that are working on this project, a lot of times people have this image in their head of a construction worker. I have to tell you, the people that I work with are some of the most professional I have ever come across. The brain power that is floating through that building working on these systems is just absolutely amazing. They have charts and letters and numbers and things that, and they right. start talking way over my head.
So the research that went into this before the project ever started must have been enormous.
Yes, you have a design phase of where you have your architects, and our architect on this project was SRG, and our construction firm, general contractor, was Hoffman Construction. SRG goes behind the scenes, does a lot of design work, a lot of research into the building, designs what they think needs to occur. Then the contractor comes along and says, okay, this is what you can really do based on what you designed and this type of building. Hmm. And then there's a give and take that goes throughout the entire process. A building this old and this intricate, every time we open a wall or a ceiling tile or get down below the floor, we always find something that we weren't expecting.
Surprises.
Surprises. We'll mm-hmm. call them that. Mm-hmm. Challenges.
What's been the biggest challenge that you've come across so far? And if you tell me running out of chocolate kisses to put on the tables, I'd be
no. No, I got to the store and got one of those.
There you go.
You know, I guess actually our biggest challenge wasn't the building, because we have the brain power to sit back and figure that out. The biggest challenge is actually when you have to do a construction like this with an occupied building. And so the human element of this is always a big challenge when you're working through these things, because you got to remember, we are messing with their workspace. They are trying to concentrate and get stuff done, and yet we are adding noise, and I'm talking loud noises. I'll talk a little bit about one we're going to be doing today. We have noise, smells as we're doing epoxy down on the flooring. We've got dust. Every time we open up one of those ceilings, you've got dust that flows down. And then, you know, just the fact that we're in their space all the time, and all of the relocations that we had to do to shuffle people around, to build the stairwells, move Oregon State Police upstairs, and so forth. So the occupants of that building have done a heroic effort from their side of things in putting up with all of this. Mm-hmm. And they've done everything they can to help us get this job done. And sometimes that means moving out of their space, dealing with no air conditioning, dealing with, while we're working on the heating system, it's cold in their rooms, all the ambiance of what's going on around them.
But then when the finished project is done, it'll be worth it, right?
It will be.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting warmed up.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Good morning. We are back. This is the Terry Saul Weekend Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, Terry Saul, and today we're talking with the CAMS Project Administrator, Jody Jones. And if you don't know what the CAMS Project is all about, drive down by the Capitol and you'll see what it's all about, right?
Of course. You can't miss us.
Now, you said something earlier about vaults. Let's talk about these vaults. What are the vaults and where are they located and what's inside of them? Give me the skinny.
All righty. So when we started in on this project, part of it was looking at the fact that there's no space inside the building to put some of the new upgraded mechanical and electrical equipment we needed. Matter of fact, they were needing more space for hearing rooms because they have so many hearings throughout session that they don't have enough space for everything. And then you think about the fact that we already took up some space when we created the stairwells. Now what do we do with all of this mechanical equipment we want to put in? You can't build another building on top of the grounds because it's a historic landmark and you don't want to take away from the view and the gardens that we have out there. So we dug a hole. We dug two holes, two very big holes.
All else fails, dig a hole.
Dig a hole. So the vault that's on the east side, and this will help eliminate any of those rumors that started spreading early on that we were building a bomb shelter for the legislators to go to. That's not what it is. There wouldn't be any room for them in there anyway by the time we fill it with equipment. The vault that's on the east side is going to house all of the Capitol's new heating and cooling equipment, as well as the piping systems.
Okay.
It's going to replace the existing equipment in the mechanical rooms on the ground floor that are nearing their end of life expectancy. So better do it now than have it all break down. The new equipment will be much more efficient, more automated, and require less maintenance than the existing systems. We have crews in our facilities group that constantly are going around trying to repair things in this building, as well as just find replacement parts.
Okay.
Which you oftentimes can't find. For example, some of our closures on the doors, we have replaced those with new ones, but they're going to use some of those components that we've taken off because they can't find them anymore to repair some of the other doors that we didn't actually replace. So that happens, again, anytime you're dealing with an older building, either you replace totally or you just keep hunting the internet to find your components. The East Vault will also contain a new main telecom room. As things, you know, progress, we need places to put that type of equipment. We think of things getting smaller, but at the same time, you get more toys that you can play with, and we need to have places in order to orchestrate all of that. So that's where that will be. Our West Vault, which is, of course, on the west side of the building, will primarily house our new electrical equipment that will provide power and lighting circuits to the existing panels throughout the building. This new electrical equipment provides new technology and manufacturing improvements that will replace the worn and outdated equipment currently located within the building. There's also a significant portion of the vault that is reserved for potential expansion in the future of the building heating and cooling systems. So that's kind of what's going into the vault. But do you mind if I talk a little bit about...
Please. Before you do, why are you calling them a vault and not just like a storage closet? Why are they being called a vault? To me, a vault is a bomb shelter, just like what we were talking about a minute ago. But why are they being called a vault?
They're built like a bomb shelter.
Okay.
And they're huge. It's not just a little closet. We're talking about... Well, let's go into that a little
okay.
bit. So each vault is approximately 4,500 square feet.
Wow.
4,500 square feet.
That's not a vault. That's a football field.
And it has and each one has approximately 2,200 cubic yards of concrete. Now, the reason for that is...
And how many vaults are there?
There's two.
There's two. Okay.
The reason that they have to be built like that is, again, we just put a hole in the ground in the Willamette Valley, and we are below the water table.
Mm.
So it rains a little bit here, and we need to make sure that
you think?
Now that we've put all that equipment down there, that it's safe and secure. So we have a concrete floor, walls, and on the roofing.
Okay.
So that's a lot of concrete going in there. In addition, we had to take out 10,000 cubic yards of dirt for each vault.
Okay.
So again, trying to get the picture of how big this guy is. In order to construct the walls, we did something called a secant pile, which basically what you do very quickly is you have a drill that drills a hole in the ground, and then you have what we call an I-beam, which is a large steel beam that is set down into that. You pour that hole full of concrete. Then the next space over, you dig another hole, and that's just solid concrete, and you just keep doing that all the way around.
Wow.
That secures up this building. And so when I was talking before about some of the noise that the occupants had to endure, that drill digging all that dirt out, and then they had to shake the dirt loose sometimes because you're talking about clay mud oftentimes.
Right.
It's extremely noisy right outside their windows. When we're putting those I-beams in, sometimes they don't quite get all the way to the bottom and you got to pound on the top of them. You can imagine some big steel pounding on steel, it gets quite irritating. And then, of course, once we're done and you uncover the rest of the dirt, then you've got all this rough surface and we need a flat surface. So now we have to chip that concrete away to make a flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
That's all some of the components that went into this. And then there's multiple waterproofing elements that go into it. If we talk a little bit about the lid that goes on top of this, the concrete lid that goes on top is 7.5 inches dense. And then that included just the lid was 110 yards of concrete was poured on the lid.
Imagine how heavy that must be.
Yes. So now you know how sturdy those walls have to be to hold the thing up. From there, once they've got that, then we end up putting a durable material for a waterproofing on top of it. Then we have a drain mat because it still rains in Oregon and we need that water to just kind of pour away from the vault lid. We have what's called a geofoam, which is sort of the strength. It's 1 to 2% the density of soil, but again, it adds another layer for that water to kind of float down through. And it's about 3 feet thick, this geofoam. And it's bright white. And that was another thing. You think about the folks looking out the window, they've got to watch all kinds of stuff. But when they're putting that geofoam down and it's sunny outside, it is so blinding white that everybody had to close their curtains and they couldn't watch the work being done anymore.
Well, they need to be working anyhow.
There you go.
For crying out loud.
And then we put another 2 feet of soil on top of that. And once that's done, then we will start completing our hardscape, which is, you know, basically pouring your concrete and your walkways and your benches and all of that, and then doing the landscaping piece of it where we'll put some new plantings in and various greenery.
But these vaults are going to be underground though, right?
Yes.
Okay, and so is there going to be like one door going in and that's it?
Yes, and those will be accessed from our garage system. So you will not be accessing those from the outside. If we ever had to remove the equipment that's in there, so the equipment's already placed before we put the lid on. If we had to remove the equipment 20, 30, 40 years from now, most all of it can be broken down and removed that way and then rebuilt inside. As you know, as technology changes in another 20 years, they'll want to put different types of equipment in there, mm-hmm. I'm sure. If we had to, there is a way that you could dig down, open up a new entryway, and drop things in with a crane. That's our last option that we would want to do. And again, things tend to get smaller in technology. So we're hoping that by the time any of that equipment was to totally be obsolete again, that we would have smaller things that we could move in there through the regular doors.
So you put this concrete lid on this vault. What's going on top of that? Because I'm assuming at that point it's going to be pretty much street level?
No. So the concrete lid goes on, and then it is topped with the waterproofing, which is just a thin film. It looks like a green paint.
Okay.
Then the drain mat, which again isn't that thick. And then that 3 feet of geofoam, which goes on top of that, and then 2 feet of topsoil. So the vault is still another 5-6 feet below street level, probably a little more than that, because now we want to put our hardscape over the top, which is another, you know, I don't know, they'll probably make them 6 inches. I haven't got that far in the process yet, as far as, you know, the walk paths and all of those kinds of things.
Now, are these vaults going to be air conditioned and as well as with heat too, or
they will be kept at a.
You're going to have to.
Yes, because there's equipment down there.
Right.
I don't know exactly what the temperature is they want to maintain. There'll be a range of temperature, but yes, there will be cooling and heating in there if necessary to keep it above freezing is the main thing for the equipment. And then you can't have certain things get too hot.
Right.
So
will there be, and heaven forbid it should ever happen, but in the event of some type of an attack, can it be used as some type of shelter? Or I understand that's not what it's being designed for, but if need be, and a certain disc jockey on KSLM needs to go find a place to hide, can that work? Why are you laughing?
Because you've got to go across town. You know, it wasn't designed that way in any respect, and so it would be negligent of me to say that it could be used that, because I honestly don't know whether it has that capability or not. It is built to withstand an earthquake. So in case of, you know, a seismic issue, a lot of the things that we're trying to do is to shore the Capitol up so that it would withstand that. Another natural disaster that could end up happening is something that ended up cutting off our electrical source. One of the other components, it's not actually in the vaults. We have a brand new generator that would keep the Capitol running in case of an emergency where we lost all electrical power to it.
And you guys are going to test fire that up today, right?
We are.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not sure if they're going to get to it today. We were hoping to, but it'll probably end up happening tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us are intrigued as to how loud it's going to be. Jenny, as we have nicknamed her, was put in place last year. And then she actually weighs 33,000 pounds.
Wow.
She has a 5,000-gallon fuel tank, and she's a 1,500-kilowatt generator, 2,000 horsepowers. So she is not a little girl.
No.
She is huge, and we actually have a room just for Jenny. We took over some of the storage area that the Capitol was using for facilities.
How long will Jenny run on a full tank of gas?
We are estimating at this time approximately 100 hours. So what we would have to do is keep refueling her, and that's part of our test. We're going to run her for 4 hours and see how much fuel she uses and then do some calculations from there. So the idea would be, of course, mainly if we're in the middle of session and we need to make some things happen, we need some place for session to be held and for those decisions to be made. So we stoke up that generator. It will not power the entire Capitol. It will only power certain components of the Capitol.
And why
we're
is that?
Slowly hooking those up. You don't want to put in a generator that big. There's a lot. I mean, basically, we want life safety to be able to run and certain be able to get the computers up and running and those kinds of things. But we're not going to have heating and air conditioning. That takes a lot of power. You just look at, you know, your own electric bill. You can break it out into, you know, what takes the most energy. The refrigerators will be turned off, for example, and nobody will be using a blow dryer. I hear that those take a lot of energy. So we just want to make sure that things continue to function during an emergency, but they're not going to be in comforts, because if that were to happen, everything else would be at that place too, and a lot of folks will be in jeopardy.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We are just getting warmed up. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Lule Homes, and Therese Lule State Farm Insurance. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
We are back with our final few minutes on the Terry Saul Show. Today's guest has been Jody Jones, the CAMS Project Administrator from the Oregon State Capitol down there. We've been talking about everything from the vaults to... Now, is there any work being done to the guy up on top, the gold man?
No, we actually are not touching him. There's question of whether he needs to be replated or whatever they do to him, but that doesn't fall within our scope of
work.
Is
that real gold?
I really don't know.
Nobody. I asked Governor Kitzhopper one day. I was doing an interview with him, and I said, "Is that real gold right above there?" He goes, "I don't know. I never climbed up to look." Okay.
It is quite a hike to get up there.
Can you actually get up there?
Yes, you can. You can. There's a tour that you can take, and you go up first the four. Well, you can take an elevator for the first four flights of stairs, and then there's several steps that actually circle around getting up to the top of the rotunda. And there's a platform up there. You can't actually get to the gold man. He's still going to be up above you several feet.
Right.
But you can look right up underneath.
Great view.
And good view. Oh, and the view of Salem is fabulous.
I bet.
If you can get up there during the cherry blossoms or when it snows.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I've been up during both, and it's absolutely beautiful.
I'll call you the next time it snows.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the trades that's going on down there.
Oh, of course. You know, I alluded to earlier about all of the different aspects of construction and that, you know, people kind of have a view of what construction is. But when you look at a project like this, for example, we have had so far over 140,000 craft hours of craftsmen coming in and working on this project.
Really?
And that is not counting the oversight group like my team and the Hoffman superintendents and all that. These are actually guys hands-on out there doing construction type work. That includes over 600 different workers that we have come through there over this time frame.
What is the time frame?
You know, I came on in April and I think they'd already been doing some work for about a year. They've been doing this for almost 2 years now that they've been
working. And how much further do you think they're going
to
go?
We are slated to end in October as far as the construction. And then we'll have just close out things that we need to do and, you know, warranties and all of that. So by the end of this year, we'll be gone. And everything will be quiet.
And then you get to retire again.
I get to retire
until
again.
Until the next project.
Exactly. I'm going to change my phone number this time.
There you go. All right. You want to tell me some more about some of these trades and the crafts? And
yeah. So, you know, I mentioned before we've got Hoffman Construction, and then we have SRG who did the design work. But we've got a lot of partners on this program or on this project. And just a few of them, we've got Demo and Framing and Build Back. And that was done by IES. Then we've got all of our plumbing and mechanical work that HydroTemp did, and electrical work that is just through the whole building all the time, and, you know, down into the vaults to when we were hooking up on the ceiling, up on the rooftop as far as the new cooling systems. And that was done by Cherry City. And then we've got the secant piles that I talked about earlier, where we had to do all that. That was Pacific Foundation, and our excavation was Kaufman. In addition to that, all the trades, I'm just going to run through this list for you, all the things that we have had done in there. We had soft floor layers, we have laborers, we've got sheet metal and HVAC workers, low energy electricians, power equipment operators, sprinkler fitters, asbestos worker and insulators, bricklayers and hod carriers, cement masons, carpenters.
When you say don't ask me what that is, you know I'm going to ask you what that is.
I have no idea what a hod carrier is.
The way you look at me and whisper with the microphones on,
don't ask me what that is.
Okay, I won't.
We've got cement masons, carpenters, electricians, glazers, painters, roofers, landscapers, plumbers, fitters, drywall tapers, plasterers, demolition laborers, surveyors, tile terrazzo finishers, iron workers, metal fence erectors, and I have probably missed at least a dozen of them.
And they all have to get along and work together, don't they?
They do, and that's where our superintendents also just are a dynamic duo to orchestrate all of this, because when you're talking about this, you have all of these different components that need to be done, and they have to layer in on top of each other. So you can't start this piece until that piece is done, and getting all of that timing and making sure that Joe is available on Thursday and that Sam completes his work Wednesday night, and weaving all that together. The charts.
What a headache.
It is. And the charts and the spreadsheets that we have on the walls to weave all that is just amazing. Right now, one of the things that we're doing is we're looking at hooking up our new electric power source that's coming into the building. So we have feeds that come in that give us our electricity just like anybody else does. But we had to temporarily move them out of the way of some of the construction that we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved that out of the way, and now we're getting ready to move it back into its permanent location, its entry into the building, and hook it up to all these new systems that we have now created. So again, we have about another month and a half, 2 months of work to make sure that all that hits just right, so that then one of the things that we're going to be doing to our poor employees, and I really feel sorry, but we're trying to find workarounds, we're shutting off the air conditioning for 2 weeks in July.
Oh, come on.
Now, that's
who came up with that? How can we torture the employees? I know. Let's turn off the air conditioning.
Turn off the air. Actually, several have asked if we could turn it off during session. It might speed things up, but you know, that's probably not a really good choice. Yeah, so we're trying to orchestrate how we get all of that done, and this is something that we don't want to miss a deadline.
Right.
So everybody's working real hard. We'll be doing round the clock shifts in some cases, especially during that 2 week period, in order to limit the amount of time that we are causing that kind of discomfort, not just to the employees, but we have visitors that come from all over. This is summertime, and some people have planned their trips, and, you know, we hate to be the 50th state that Martha and George are visiting on their last.
And they can't get in.
And they can't get in.
And so, plus, you have to be able to accommodate all the protesters, too. You know, you got to make room for them.
We probably won't have any in the summertime.
That's right. let's talk. We only have about 3 minutes left here. Let's talk a little bit about the elevation monitoring that's been going on.
Oh, yeah.
What is that all about?
So one day somebody called facilities and they said, "We think the building's sinking." This is no joke. And they had put a marble for some reason on the floor, or a pencil or something, and it rolled. And so they were kind of near the edge of the building where we were digging the vaults. And so they thought that maybe all of this digging that we were doing had damaged the foundation, or we dug underneath, or whatever the case may be, and so that the building was now tilting. One of the things that we did is we assured them, and then we put out in what we have as a weekly update just to tell people what's coming up for construction and keep them informed.
Right.
We also like to put little tidbits of information in. And so one of the pieces that we put in was about how we monitor the building. So before the construction ever started, we have testing points or stable points that you mark on other places that never sink around the building on other buildings. And then we mark places on our building. And then every week we go out and make sure that those still line up. And they do. So the building is not sinking. We are in good shape. And the marbles just roll because...
Marbles roll.
Marbles roll.
There you go.
There you go.
Jody, we are just about out of time here. But would you do me a favor? Will you come back? And I still got a lot more questions I could ask you here. And as we get closer to this being complete, would you come back and chat with us again?
Of course I would.
Now, is there any way people can get in touch with you if they wanted to ask some more questions themselves? You have a Facebook page. Don't give a phone number out because I have crazy people that listen to my show.
Okay.
But do you have a Facebook page?
If you go onto the Capitol page, just look up Oregon State Capitol, and there's a website there. And then we have a link to that, to the CAMS project, and we have all kinds of things posted on there that people can kind of keep updates and see what's going on.
All right, great. Jody, thank you again. We are just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m., and then a replay on Sundays at 11 a.m. right here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or you would like to hear any of my shows, you can always check out the podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I would love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care. Be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Holmes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.